listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to us.
Kairos Milwaukee United Church of Christ presents What Can You See? The sermon by the Reverend Gene Randall Bodman, presented on Sunday, March 26th, 2017.
Once again, we are faced with a text that is a bit of an earful. In fact, this week's text puts last week's text to shame for its convoluted nature, its confusions, reversals, and layers of meaning. And once again, we have a text that seems like it might be about sin and forgiveness, but which isn't. It's also kind of hilarious if you read it in the right spirit. A one-act play in seven scenes in which the one character who cannot see is the only character who finally does see. And the many people who can see, the neighbors, the Pharisees, the religious leaders, and even the parents of the unnamed blind man, all fail to see what is of utmost importance. Jesus' disciples, they play the cameo role that gets the whole story started by their unseeing question. Who sinned, this man or his parents? These are the two main questions for us as we encounter this story of healing, questioning, theological debate, and finally, encounter with Jesus and profession of faith. Who sinned, and do you see? They are, of course, related questions. The disciples seem to think it is quite clear that someone has sinned, either the man born blind or his parents. This idea of moral causation for physical illness or disability was common at the time. It was not an outlandish question. But Jesus is quite clear in his response. Neither. You are asking the wrong question. He was just born that way. And then Jesus does the light-bringing, light-bearing work for which he was sent. He heals the man, and then he exits stage left until the last scene of the play. But the question of sin has not been solved for the Pharisees, and they will not let it drop. And they won't let it drop for the man either. Now the neighbors, having met the man, now healed and sighted, cannot agree among themselves whether this is actually the man, though they have probably passed him in the marketplace day after day in his habitual place of begging, and though he keeps assuring them that, yes, it is me, I'm the very one. They demand to know how it happened. And when he tells them, they want to know where Jesus is, presumably so that they can get confirmation from him. But as I mentioned, Jesus has stepped out so that the neighbors take the man to the Pharisees to get their take on the whole situation. They should know. They're religious leaders. Well, the Pharisees are indignant. First, they want to hear the whole story. Then they demand to know how on earth that can be true, since it is the Sabbath, and healing on the Sabbath would be a sin. It makes no sense to them. So they ask, what do you say about this Jesus fellow? He answers them, as if on the fly, he's a prophet. No way. The Pharisees are not having it. They're not believing it. This can't be the blind man. Let's get his parents in here and see what they have to say. What they have to say is, here's what we know. This is our son, and he has been blind all his life. No idea how he got his sight or who did it. Ask him. He's of age. They do not want to commit. The text tells us that they are afraid of being put out of the synagogue, put out of the congregation. But I wonder if they were also afraid of a recurrence of that question about who sinned. So the Pharisees go back to the blind man and press him again for an answer. Come on, this man that you're claiming healed you, He must be a sinner. The blind man says, I don't know that at all. Your categories are not making any sense. What I do know is that I was blind, and now I see. And something even more astonishing. You religious leaders, you're supposed to know this stuff. This man healed me. Such a thing has never happened in all of human history. Couldn't possibly happen without God. God doesn't listen to sinners. Ergo, Jesus is not a sinner. The Pharisees, who really can't see past the end of their own judgmental noses, circle back to answer the disciples' first question. You, blind man, you were born entirely in sin. How dare you try to teach us? And they drove him out of the congregation. At the end of this long story, Jesus re-enters and goes to find the man, who first of all had never asked to be healed and has never yet seen Jesus face to face. And in their encounter, the man sees everything, not just the whole world, which he had never seen before, but also this one face, and more importantly, into the deep heart of the matter, of who this person is for him, of the trust he now places in him, and the irrelevancy of the question, who sinned? The man who was born blind sees the world around him all at once. He comes to see or understand Jesus more deeply as the story progresses. First, he understands him as a prophet. Next, as a man from God. Finally, Jesus is Lord. Now, to believe is not just to think that something is true or correct. It's also, and perhaps more importantly, to trust. To begin to believe is to begin to have a relationship. I'm reminded of the scene in the Christmas movie, The Miracle on 34th Street. I know I'm all out of season, but bear with me. Kris Kringle has been double-crossed and sent to a mental institution for evaluation. Fearing that Doris, a person who cared about him, who he cared about, was in on the double cross, he intentionally fails the test. When another friend, Fred, shows up to visit and reveals that Doris wasn't in on the double cross, Kris leaves it up to Fred, the lawyer, to get him out of the fix he helped put himself in. When Fred protests to Kris looks at him with his eyes twinkling and says cheerfully, "But Fred, I believe in you." He doesn't mean simply that he believes Fred to exist and to have earned a JD and to work for a good law firm. It doesn't even mean he has a high estimation of Fred's skills, though that is true too. He believes in him means that he relies on him. He trusts him. He entrusts his well-being and his heart to him. So it is with the newly sighted man as he encounters Jesus. He says, "I believe in you." The true light has enlightened both his physical world and his spiritual world. Meanwhile, the Pharisees, those scholars of the faith and leaders of the religious congregation who spend their time talking about God and clarifying the law, they cannot see. It's very tempting to see ourselves as the blind man who has received enlightenment. But I wonder, what things do I miss? Do we as a congregation miss? What things do we as the United Church of Christ miss? In her beautiful book, Learning to Walk in the Dark, Barbara Brown Taylor wrote about her imaginative exploration of darkness and light and what it would mean to be born blind. She writes about a kind of light that goes beyond our senses, and she seeks the source of that transcendent light, the light experienced by mystics across religious traditions, of which she says, My guess is that this idea is as incomprehensible to those who have not experienced it as it is indisputable to those who have. It was best described for her by Jacques Lusserain, a French resistance fighter who became permanently and completely blind when he was 7. He wrote in his memoir, "Barely 10 days after my accident, I made a discovery that entranced me for the rest of my life. The only way I can describe that experience is in clear and direct words. I had completely lost the sight of my eyes. I could not see the light of the world anymore. Yet the light was still there. Its source was not obliterated. I felt it gushing forth every moment and brimming over. I felt how it wanted to spread out over the world. I had only to receive it. It was unavoidably there. It was all there. And I found it again, its movements and shades, its colors, everything that I had loved so passionately before I lost my sight." This was something entirely new, all the more so since it contradicted everything that those who have eyes believe. The source of light is not in the outer world. We believe that it is only because of a common delusion. The light dwells where life also dwells, within ourselves. At first, Taylor thought that this gentleman was speaking metaphorically or theologically. But as she continued to read, it became clear to her that he was also speaking literally of an experience of light that had nothing to do with his eyes. With practice, he learned to attend so carefully to the world around him that he confounded his friends by describing things he could not see. He could tell trees apart by the sounds of their shadows. He could tell how tall or wide a wall was by the pressure it exerted on his body. The oak, the poplar, the nut tree, each have their own specific levels of sound. The tone of a plane tree is entered like a room. It indicates a certain order in space, zones of tension and zones of free passage. The same is true of a wall or a whole landscape. The problem with seeing the regular way is that sight naturally prefers outer appearances. It attends to the surface of things, which makes it an essentially superficial sense. We let our eyes skid over trees, furniture, traffic, faces, too often mistaking sight for perception, which is easy to do when our eyes work so well, to help us, to orient us in space. Speed is another problem. Our eyes glide so quickly over things that we do not properly attend to them. Fingers, on the other hand, do not glide that quickly. To feel a table is a much more intimate activity than seeing it. Run your hands across the top, and you can find the slight dip in the middle of the center panel that you might otherwise have missed. Proof that this table was planed by hand. After that, your fingers work in inches instead of feet, counting the panels by finding the cracks that separate them, locating a burn, sickle-shaped, like the bottom edge of a hot skillet, and a large burl as well. You can smell the candle wax before you find it, noting the dents here and there left by diners who brought their silverware down too hard. If this does not sound particularly spiritual to us, it may have more to do with us than with the table. Every major spiritual tradition in the world has something significant to say about the importance of paying attention. "Look at the birds of the air," Jesus said. "Consider the lilies of the field." If you do not have time to pay attention to an ordinary table, How will you ever find time to pay attention to the spirit? Lucy Rand wrote, "Since becoming blind, I have paid more attention to 1,000 things." And one of his greatest discoveries was how the light he saw changed with his inner condition. When he was sad or afraid, the light decreased at once. Sometimes it went out altogether, leaving him deeply and truly blind. When he was joyful or attentive, it returned as strong as ever. He learned very quickly that the best way to see the inner light and remain in its presence was to love. Taylor adds in her rereading, "There is also that strange thing Jesus says at the end of a long healing story. 'I came into this world for judgment,' he says, after healing a man who has been blind from birth, 'so that those who do not see may see, and those who do see may become blind.'" She had always heard this as a threatening judgment. But finally, for Barbara Brown Taylor, this became promising. She writes, "At the very least, it makes me wonder how seeing has made me blind, by giving me cheap confidence that one quick glance at things can tell me what they are, by distracting me from learning how the light inside me works, by fooling me into thinking that I have a clear view of how things really are, of where the road leads, of who else can see rightly and who cannot. I am not asking to become blind, but I have become a believer. There is a light that shines in the darkness, which is only visible there." The man born blind sees God's truth so much better than those who spend all their time studying and talking about God. While all the other characters in the story remain at the end, where they were at the beginning, the healed man's life is transformed, and he finds himself in a very different place. And Jesus is there with him in that very different place. John told his story and used these images of seeing and not seeing, believing and not believing, to help an early Christian community find themselves in that story. They knew what it felt like to be driven away from their congregation by the religious authorities, to be expelled from their home church. Jesus helps them to connect their loss with the gain of grace in their powerful experience of conversion and healing, understanding, and trust. I wonder sometimes how we become like the Pharisees, sighted but unable to see, unable to connect with our own inner light. What do we see and what do we fail to see because our eyes glance across the surface? What do we see and what do we fail to see because we don't take time to absorb what we are looking at? What beauty are we missing as our eyes skim past the faces around us? What sorrows have we failed to comfort? What troubles failed to assuage? What joys have we missed sharing? What do we see and what do we fail to see in ourselves, our families, our neighborhood, our city, because we have decided that we understand all we need to understand about the people around us? What strengths have we left unappreciated? What offered creativity have we ignored? What injustice or harm have we walked past, all unseeing? Jesus invites us into a relationship of trust where our inner and outer seeing are restored. Like the woman at the well, Jesus sees us who we are. Like the blind man, Jesus seeks us and invites us into deep light. As this season of Lent winds its way toward Holy Week, I encourage you to slow down when you can. As you move through your days, think of a point that you walk past all the time, an unimportant spot that is between here and there. And this time, instead of speeding across it with your mind full of what you will do when you arrive, dawdle and look. It might be beautiful, it could be ugly, but something is there and it's waiting for you. Breathe that moment in and see what is before you. And even if it is only for a few moments each day, sit still and practice. Close your eyes and see the space that you are in with your other senses. Notice all the sounds that are around you and which direction they are coming from. Feel the chair that you are sitting in, the padding beneath your thighs, the smoothness or roughness of the arm beneath your arm. Notice the aromas, coffee, flowers, lemon pledge, dinner cooking, or the soft spring air coming in the window. Let your senses be flooded with all that is in that space. Stay quietly there for as long as you are comfortable. And then open your eyes and see that space afresh. And give thanks. Amen.